I welcome you all students for today's session on managerial economics. We will be discussing today chapter 9, that is market and price determination under perfect competition. Now before we begin this chapter, let's have a recap. After understanding cost and cost function, short run, long run cost, it is equally important to understand the concepts of revenue and market structure. Now, we will start the discussion of revenue with the basic ideas of market power, market structure, and various concepts of total revenue, average revenue, and marginal revenue. Students, it's very important to understand about the market structure in order to understand how the decision made by one firm in one type of market affects the revenue of another firm in another market structure. It's found that most of the firm's frequency with respect to market decisions that affect that basically affects the revenue of other firms. Now we'll just take an example. For example, we'll take Pepsi and Coca-Cola. Decide that one day the manager of Pepsi-Cola decides to reduce the price. The moment he reduces the price, not only will it affect its own revenue, at the same time it will also be affecting the revenue of another firm, its closest competitor, that's Pepsi. What will happen? So this ability to make a decision, decide the price, change the price, which in turn affects the firm's own revenue, the decision making firm's revenue, and the revenue of any other firm, is totally controlled by price, which totally depends on market power. What we have to see is how the decision making of one firm, especially with respect to changes in price, affect the revenue of another firm. That means when one firm brings down the price, taking you back to the example of Pepsi and Coca-Cola, if Coca-Cola reduces the price, it will be in a position to attract more customers and thereby capture the market share. So the revenue of Coca-Cola will increase and the revenue of Pepsi will fall. It's just because a change in pricing strategy. So here firm A's revenue will go up and firm B revenue will fall. You have to thus come to a conclusion that is the revenue of Coca-Cola, that is firm A, and the revenue of Pepsi, that is firm B, anyway related? Are they interdependent? So definitely we are therefore trying to make a concept that market power relates to the revenue of one firm and the revenue of another firm. Now the most important question that arises is, from where does this market power comes? Market power of one company totally depends on the market structure. And that's why we have to understand in this chapter, how is a market structure identified? So let's go ahead. We will begin with, what do we mean by market? Market is a network of dealings between buyers and sellers. That means all the transactions that are taking place between the buyers and the sellers is more than enough for the establishment of market. Market gets established when there is any type of transaction taking place between the buyers class and the consumer, the seller's class. So, here you will come to know that when we talk about this network of dealings, I want you to focus on the word network of dealings. When we look back in the economics books, traditionally we would say that market is a place where buyers and sellers meet. You know, those times when technologically the markets were not well advanced, market was restricted to a geographical location. And whenever we speak about market in the class, we ask our students, come on, what do you think about market? Or today we are going to study about market. The students used to start imagining a place crowded with people, number of sellers, vendors, shops. Even today, when I talk about market, or when you tell somebody that you are staying very near to a market, what idea comes into the mind? Immediately the idea comes is very crowded. Two narrow lanes. So students, market today is not just restricted to geographical locations, but with e-commerce, online trading, we define market as network of dealings. So it's very important that market is nothing but it is a characteristic phenomena of economic life, and the constitution of markets and market prices becomes a central problem of economics. Whenever we look at changing prices, we try to focus on how is the market behaving. The market behavior helps us to understand how the prices change. So therefore, we have to concentrate on understanding of market based on types. How is market classified? Markets are classified into local, national, and world markets. Now students, entering into world market is more difficult. There are entry barriers in terms of changing currency, in terms of government policies, in terms of competition, buyers preferences. In fact, in India, if you look at the 1950 onwards, Indian economy was a very regulated economy with state controlled. The role of government or the role of state was more of a controller, a regulator. It was the license Raj which existed from 1950 till 1980. And then in 91, we came up with a new wave of reforms. Now again, the newspapers are talking about a new wave of reforms with FDI coming into various areas from aviation to broadcasting and many other categories. Definitely 91 opened the doors and the barriers towards the global market, globalization. That's where market concept again gets reflected. Free flow of goods and services, free flow of capital movements. That means investing money abroad, the foreign capital being invested in India. So it's very important for us to recognize geographically how these barriers keeps on changing, making the purchase and sale of goods and services possible and easier. We have to, in this chapter, focus more on how markets are classified on the basis of competition. Yes, we are only going to focus more on how does a market gets divided on the basis of competition. Now, when you talk about competition, we divide the market into two groups. One, perfect market, call it popularly perfect competition. And the next is imperfect market, known as imperfect competition. So you have to remember that markets get classified into perfect competition and imperfect competition. Before we go ahead with perfect and imperfect, Let me tell you that there are three elements which identify the market structure, which classifies the market on the basis of competition. Students, classifying market on the basis of competition gives us an idea of market structure. So, when we talk about the three elements which are very important for understanding and classifying market structure are, first, the number of firms in the market, the number of sellers in the market. Now, this number of sellers will decide the power which each seller has. I repeat, the number of sellers in a market will decide how much power each seller has in the market. This power is about deciding price and deciding output. And it has been seen that as the number of firms increases, each firm's market power becomes very small. That means an individual firm will have a very small share of the market and the power over price will be very, very less. So, less the number of firms, more lies the power in the hand of each firm. We are talking about the market power. The second element is freedom of entry. Freedom of entry. How easy it is for new firms to enter the market. That is the entry conditions. Here we are basically talking about the use of technology and the use of resources. So, giving you an example on freedom of entry. We find, let's say that you want to enter into the market of making paper planes. One paper plane is sold for 10 rupees. One paper plane is sold for 10 rupees. You want to enter into the market of making paper planes. I'm sure many of you would set up your business very fast because making paper planes is comparatively a easier task. But suppose if you want to enter into car manufacturing or aviation, making of aircrafts. Now that is difficult. You need to acquire a good technology as well as access to resources. So therefore, how easy it is to enter a market structure depends on the use of technology and the use of resources. And the last, the third element, it is the degree to which the product is standardized. The degree to which the product is standardized. Now here we are purely talking about paper planes. Paper planes all are more or less same. Now, when I take the example of, let's say, farmers producing wheat, most of the farmers are producing the wheat of the same type. So, that is an identical product. But what about cars? You have different models of cars. That is a differentiated product. So, I repeat again, there are three elements at the base level, very basic to understand and distinguish market structure. The first, number of firms in the market. Second, the freedom of entry into the market. And the third, the degree to which the product is standardized. So here, keeping this in mind, we go back to this slide and say that market gets divided into perfect market and differentiated market. The perfect market consists of perfect competition, and the differentiated market consists of monopoly, duopoly, oligopoly, and monopolistic competition. You have to remember this very well, students, that the imperfect markets are of four types, starting with monopoly, oligopoly, duopoly, and monopolistic competition. Well, we would now go ahead with the very first type of market structure, that is perfect competition. As you see in this slide, students, there are six characteristics of perfect competition mentioned. Large number of buyers and sellers, homogeneous commodity, free entry and free exit, perfect knowledge, perfect mobility, no transport cost. You will find that out of these six conditions, there are many conditions which are very abstract, like no transport cost, which is a business where you don't have any transport cost involved. So when we look at perfect competition, it is one of the extreme types of market structure that existed in India and many other countries before development began, or when these economies were very backward. Like for example, take a situation of the before independence, during the during the 12th, 13th or 15th century, you will find that most of the villages were self-sufficient. If you go back to history, it tells us that most of the villages were self-sufficient. All the needs of the villagers were met in the village only, because there was a barter system which existed. We are talking about even before the evolution of money. So if we go back, if we take our thoughts to the time, imagine there is a small village, and in this village there are at only 500 people living. Okay, now in this village we will find that 500 people will constitute our first characteristic, large number of buyers and sellers, because majority of them are artisans. So they are making, there may be goldsmith, there may be a pot maker, there may be a farmer, carpenter, cobbler, whatever are the needs, accordingly the artisans. So whatever the villagers want, they will buy it from the village artisans only. Homogeneous commodity. There may be 10 to 15 pot makers. There may be 10 to 15 cobblers. There may be 10 to 15 farmers cultivating the same type of food crop. So this makes the product homogeneous, where there is no product differentiation. It's exactly the same. As a customer, you cannot differentiate. Let's say the apples grown on a tree in a village. All the apples in a nearby tree will all be same. I mean, whether it's the first one that is being plucked or the last one, more or less it will be same. It's an assumption. Now there may be that the apple may be sweet, it may be bitter, sour. Still, we go by an assumption. Taking you another example of homogeneous commodity, I gave you the example of pot maker. If they are making identical pots, then that comes under homogeneous commodity. You'll find this even today when you go to that garden, to buy this floriculture and horticulture. If you go there, you'll find that they give you those pots, earthen pots, in which the plants can be grown. More or less, they are standardized in size, made of the same clay or mud. So there are many cases where you will find the second characteristic applicable in the real day market, where there's no product differentiation. Then comes the third one, which is free entry and free exit. There are no hard and fast rules of entering into this market structure, no licensing required. So in the village, the farmer, if he decides that he doesn't want to cultivate wheat and use the resources for cultivating some other food crop, He is free to do that. Similarly, anybody who wants to enter into the business of making, of making pots or cultivating wheat, they are free. So the conditions, that is barriers to entry, are nil. Perfect knowledge. Since it's one village, all the villagers are aware of the price. They are all aware of the quality of the product. The buyers and the sellers have complete information with respect to the product. Perfect mobility. Now this point, perfect mobility is about the mobility of resources. You will find that the farmer is in a position to make alternative use of the resources. The same land, instead of using it for cultivation of wheat, cultivating some other crop which for which the land is suitable. Similarly, instead of making a small pot, the farmer can decide to make a huge pot. The pot maker, sorry. So what you find here is that there is a perfect mobility of factors of production. And then comes no transport cost. Since the resources are available in the village and the sellers are utilizing the resources from the village and selling it to the villagers only, there is no transport cost involved. This is a model which existed when villages were self-sufficient. There was no need of buying any product from another village. So, this condition is a very unreal, or a condition in a very underdeveloped economy where still the population is not increasing and all the demand of the people is met with the existing resources. The problem emerges when population starts increasing at a rate faster than the increase in the rate of resources. And that is how interdependence between one village and the other emerges. One country and the other emerges. Why there is trade? Is it only because the production costs are high in one country? It's also because the resources to make the product are definitely less or scarce in one country. And therefore, they are easily available from the other countries. So we import them, oil, for example. So students, perfect competition characteristics, if you look at all these 6 points, and wherever you find the 6 conditions, you say, yes, this is perfect competition. Now here, you have to remember that which of these conditions can be existed for a real day market. We take you to another slide. Here we have divided. We have divided the first 3 conditions under a heading called pure competition. That means when there are large number of buyers and sellers selling homogeneous commodity with free entry and exit conditions, there is a pure competition market structure. So what are the conditions of pure competition? Or how many conditions are necessary for pure competition? Only 3. Large number of buyers and sellers. Do you find this in case of share market? There are large number of investors, large number of buyers, large number of sellers. Most of the shares are almost identical because they are all listed in BSE, and the investment and the sale is on a uniform price. Free entry and free exit. Anybody can enter into the share market as a buyer, as an investor. And if you don't find it profitable, you can quit. We are talking it from the seller's point of view. No doubt, SEBI has control over the entry condition of business firms. So wherever you find these conditions at simultaneously existing in any nature of business, you identify it with pure competition. But the moment we add the remaining 3 conditions, that is perfect knowledge of market conditions, perfect mobility of factors, and no transport cost, it makes pure or it converts pure competition to perfect competition. Now the question comes is that after understanding the six characteristics where there are large number of buyers and sellers, who decides the price? Because as I said that when there are large number of sellers, the market power that lies in the hand of one seller is very small. One seller has no control over market power, or one seller has no control over price. The seller, individual seller, individual firm under a perfect competition model is only a price taker. You cannot dictate the market price. So this slide is throwing light on how is price determined if there is a market competition existing. Let's understand it. It says that price is decided by the forces of demand and supply. So, in perfect competition, the price depends on market forces. The demand and supply for the product will only decide the price which will be stabilized. To understand this, we will have to look at the market demand and supply graph in the next slide. As you see in this slide, the demand graph is downward sloping because on the x-axis we are measuring quantity demanded and price on the y-axis. So as the price is falling, the demand is expanding, making the demand curve have a negative slope. On the other hand, the supply graph is having a positive slope. As the prices go up, the supply will start increasing. So demand curve has a negative slope, supply curve has a positive slope. And there is a point where they intersect. This is known as the equilibrium point. Equilibrium point is the point where all that is being sold, all that is being demanded, everything that has to be sold, everything that has to be demanded, both are in balance. The demand equals supply. No seller is going home with unsold stock, and no buyer is going home without buying a product. So what is the equilibrium price? It is 20 rupees. At 20 rupees, the equilibrium quantity is 300 units. So we say that at 20 rupees, there are 300 units. So 20 rupees becomes the market clearing price. What happens at the above side of this equilibrium point? You have to look at the graph above the point E. The demand curve is first, the supply curve follows later. So demand is less and the supply is more. The point above equilibrium is a case of excess supply. Supply is more but the demand is less. So whenever the supply will be more, whenever there will be more number of pot makers or more number of farmers, more amount of goldsmith, the competition between them, because the supply is more and everybody wants to clear the stock but the demand is not that much, prices will be pushed down. So price which was, as you see over here, 60 rupees. At 60 rupees, the demand is 100 and the supply is, let's say, 600. Imagine 500 excess demand, excess supply. 500 units are unsold because the demand is only for 100. But the lying stock with the seller is 600. So 500 becomes excess supply. It will push down the price from 60 to 20 rupees, where the quantity demanded and the quantity supplied becomes equal. What happens when the when you look at the lower panel of this graph? You will find here the supply. At 20 rupees, the supply is 200. At 10 rupees, the supply is 200. and the demand is 500. So this is a case of excess demand. The demand is more because the price is very low. So whenever we face a situation of excess demand, the prices will be pulled up. So this diagram only tries to make you understand how does the price, equilibrium price, get settled, or what do you mean by disequilibrium? When are the prices being pushed down and when are the prices being pulled up? It is purely the total market demand and the total market supply. Now we go ahead. Here we are trying to make you understand that in perfect competition, what will happen if there is a shift in the demand and supply graph? Students, when we have studied chapter number 3 and chapter number 6, if you remember, chapter number 3 was on demand analysis and chapter 6 you have studied in detail about supply. There you have studied a topic called variation in demand, changes in demand. Variation in supply and changes in supply. Do you remember? You are exactly going to use that knowledge over here now. That is the shift in demand graph and the shift in supply. So let's understand it with the next diagram. Here you can see that the supply curve is 1 and there are 2 demand curves. It means that demand is changing but not the supply. So we are trying to make you understand that in perfect competition model, what will happen is that if the supply is not changing and there is an equilibrium price, that is P, OP is the equilibrium price, OM is the equilibrium quantity, demanded and supplied. So P becomes our market clearing price. Now there is a sudden increase in demand. This may be due to non-price factors. Whenever due to any non-price factor, there is a fluctuation in the demand, the demand will shift to the right, as you see in this diagram. There is a new demand graph which is called D1, D2. So this D1, D2 is known as a new demand for the product. But the supply takes time to adjust to the rising demand. Whenever supply will take time to adjust to demand, the prices will increase. So in perfect competition, the prices will increase only when the demand increases without giving time for the supply to adjust. And that is the time when our individual sellers will make profit. Each firm under perfect competition will start enjoying profits. So, let's say there are certain services which are free given in your city. Let's say withdrawing money from ATM is free. There is no transaction fees. But if there is a huge demand for withdrawing money from ATM machines, with limited capacity of the machines to supply, then the prices will increase. That's what this if you look at the current decision taken by the government with respect to LPG, that LPG will be restricted to only 6 cylinders per year, and if the family is not in below poverty line, then over and above the 6 cylinders per year, they will have to pay 900 per cylinder. So that is what you see over here. The demand will shift. If there is a huge demand compared to the existing supply, people will have to pay a high price to fulfill their need. So, in this, each individual company will gain. Now, this LPG does not come under perfect competition. But we are here talking about all those retail stores, LPG agencies who are supplying this. They will all get the benefit of that. Let's go ahead to the next concept. Here, again we are giving you a situation where price will increase under perfect competition. But as you look at this diagram, it is exactly opposite. There the supply was one, supply curve was one, and there were two demand curves. Look at this slide. Here, your demand graph is one, but there are two supply curves. The old supply curve is SS and the new supply curve is S1, S2. You will find that the supply curve has shifted to the left. Supply has reduced. Again, due to non-price factors. The raw material may not be available, or sometimes the sellers may not be in any position to supply because they need time. They may be running short of finance. Any non-price factor which affects the supply. So, at a given price, our equilibrium point is E and the equilibrium price is OP. OP is the equilibrium price. OM1 is the equilibrium quantity supplied and demanded. So, P will become our market clearing price. But suppose due to unavoidable circumstances, the sellers are not in a position to supply more, then supply will shift to the left, reducing the supply to M, OM. So, M1 to M is the reduction in supply. But there is no fluctuation, the demand is constant. I mean the demand exists, but the supply has reduced. This will push up the prices and price will become P1. So, what do you learn from these two slides? Price may increase under perfect competition in two cases. First, when the demand increases without supplying letting to adjust. And second, when demand decreases due to any unavoidable circumstances. So, this covers our increase in price based on the market forces. Now, we have to understand when will the price fall? When will the price fall? To understand that, we will be focusing on the another diagrams similar to what we have studied now. In this slide, if you look at this diagram, same, you have an equilibrium point E and the price is OP, the quantity demanded and supplied is OM. So, students, OP becomes our market clearing price because it's an equilibrium price. It is the price at which the demand and the supply are equally met. Now, what happens is, because there is a condition of free entry under perfect competition, more number of sellers enter the market. There are 100 sellers, now there are 50 more. So, whenever the sellers are more, the supply will increase. And the very first effect of free entry will be a shift in the supply graph towards the right. So, you will find your old supply curve is SS and the new supply curve is S1, S2. So, supply has shifted to the right and you get a new equilibrium point E1. But this new equilibrium point is the point where our prices are lowered. So, price will fall whenever the demand will be more or the demand will increase at the existing demand. The supply will increase, right? So, whenever the demand is constant and the supply will increase, there is an increase in supply. Because there are more sellers, there is free entry. You will find that happening in electronics. The number of mobiles, the number of companies providing mobiles have drastically increased, bringing down the price of the mobile phones. So, you have come to the conclusion of how supply adjustment will definitely affect the market price. the market demand and the market supply are the only factors which determine price under perfect competition. Because the concept is only when all the sellers together decide not to supply, prices will go up. Or when all the sellers decide to supply more, prices will fall. What if someday all the buyers decide not to buy? Prices will go down. So the perfect competition model is purely based on market mechanism. That's happening in share market. The number of people investing money in shares decide the price of shares. The number of companies taking out money from the share market decides the value of shares. So it's purely based on the market demand for shares and the market supply of shares together, which decides its value and the operation of the stock market. Now here we will be concluding this chapter by introducing you to what role time plays in the theory of price. And this time is divided into very short period. It is a time where supply cannot be adjusted to meet the market demand. You will find this in case of perishable products. And as you see the example of milk being given over here, if suddenly there is a huge demand for milk, the supply cannot be adjusted and that will definitely increase the price. So if the time is very short, as 1 day, 1 hour, it is not possible for the sellers to immediately adjust the supply to meet the rising demand. So they get the benefit of increasing the price. You will find this that whenever there is any natural calamity or any type of strike, let's say there's an auto strike, suddenly an auto strike. So what will happen? The scarcity, there will be scarcity of the mode of transport and the pressure on the other vehicles will increase. And you will find that there are many company and school buses who start making a profit by making the people avail the service at a higher price. You will always find this happens. So in a very short period, whenever there is a scarcity of supply of any service, the pressure of the demand comes on the other existing resources. And the consumers will get the product or get the service only at higher price. So very short period is the time where supply cannot be adjusted to the rising demand. Then there is a short period where you can adjust supply because here you have a little more time. So if we say that very short is 1 day, then short has to be 1 week. And when it is 1 week, at least supply can be adjusted to meet the demand. This is how the time element has an effect on price. And if you look at this diagram, you will find, oh God, what's happening? Where are the graphs moving? Well, you just look at these graphs. This is called as market supply curve, which is perfectly inelastic, very short period. Therefore, it is a horizontal line. When the time starts increasing, the graph will start changing its direction. Okay, it will be following from a 90 degree to a towards a 40 degree and 20 degree angle. So look at this graph. It's a 90 degree line. Slowly it is moving to 60 degrees, 50 degrees, you can say 40 or maybe 30, 35 degrees. So this is how the time, as the time changes, the elasticity of the graph or the slope of the graph also changes, purely telling us that whenever the time increases, the flexibility of supply will increase. And if horizontal, this is a vertical line, this is a very short period market supply curve. So what will happen when there is a very long period? You will get this horizontal dotted line, which is called as LPS. This is a very long period supply. So long period mein you can adjust the supply, as I discussed, and very long period is unpredictable. You cannot predict the supply of a particular song 10 years from today, 20 years from today. How long you will keep on listening to ghazals of various singers, nobody can predict. Or the direction of the best movies for how many more years. So whenever it comes to somebody like Amitabh Bachchan and the Crorepati show, people always keep on predict. Oh, how long will this show go on? How many years more? So we say a very long period we cannot predict. But yes, we can predict that it will go on for the next month or for few weeks. So you can see that whenever it comes to such shows, reality shows and all, there is a time period which is being set. And this time period tells us that the supply of these services will be available. So, time element plays a very, very important role. In this way, we come to the conclusion of this chapter of perfect competition, where you understood what a market structure is. Market structure helps us to understand the market power. You can say the market power which one company has totally depends on identifying the market structure in which the firm belongs. And then you also realize that apart from perfect and imperfect market structure, the perfect competition is an extreme model of market structure. And imperfect competition, the market forces, that is the demand and supply, play a very, very important role. You understood how the prices fluctuate when any of these market forces change. And finally, the Marshall's concept of time element, which throws light on the adjustment of supply to time. So, we will go ahead further with understanding the relation between market structure and revenue. So, we come to the conclusion of this chapter 9, where we understand what role time plays in adjusting supply to the changing market demand. So, please remember that market structure and perfect competition totally is controlled by market forces. Thank you.